Stone & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry here on the program. So, Mike Vrabel yesterday had his coach's TV show, and you all know that there is nobody that watches that TV show like I do with those keys to the game. And I think it's because he gives away the legit, like, he tells you what the keys to the game are. And boy, he had a doozy yesterday. You just want to get right to it?
Let's get into it.
Okay. So my theory is that Mike Vrabel has spent all week trying to temper down this Bengals rematch for Ryan Tannehill, right? Remember yesterday when Vrabel was like, not a revenge game. We got 50% new players. And Jeffrey Simmons said that Vrabel opened the team meeting up asking who didn't play in the game last year and that all the hands went up. And he was like, Jeffrey Simmons was wowed by that. And I joked about how I'm surprised the Titans aren't wearing white uniforms to make the Bengals wear black uniforms so that, you know, it doesn't send Tannehill into that Bengals game PTSD. Well, apparently they're wearing the light blue uniforms as opposed to the dark blue uniforms that they wore last year in the playoffs. I'm not saying that that's why they're doing it, but did we not kind of talk about that yesterday?
We did talk about that.
Just to keep out any of the common denominators
from that day.
Yes, if they could play it in a different stadium, they would. If they could play it at Vandy Stadium, they would, just so Tannehill wouldn't have the same visions of what happened last year in the playoffs. Now, Mike Vrabel was doing his keys to the game. I forget what the special teams... Oh, the special teams key was be fast and violent. The defensive key, I forget what it... Oh, I think it was make them earn everything like it was for the Chiefs. And then his offensive key. Now, remember, Ryan Tannehill just threw for 330 yards on national TV. And his offensive key was run the ball and take care of the ball.
Well, we did at times against this team, but just not effectively enough consistently through four quarters. And then take care of it. We've talked about the turnover margin and how critical that's going to be. But we know where our strength is, and that's running the football. And we've got to be creative, but we also have to lean on Derek and get going.
So last week, the passing game led the offense. And they really did go hand in hand, you know, the running game and the passing game. But last week, the passing game led the offense. Everybody was impressed with Ryan Tannehill. We got 15 clips of Phil Sims. You know, I'll tell you, Ryan Tannehill has just been phenomenal this season. And the way he throws the ball and all that Phil Sims jargon, and everybody's excited. And here's Vrabel like, we want to run the ball, lean on Derek, and whatever we do, don't turn the ball over. Do you think Vrabel is afraid of Tannehill this week because of what happened last year?
Probably. But also, in that same breath, isn't the key to the game almost every week, run the football and don't turn the football over? Isn't that just what this team is built on?
So, I forget what the key for the Broncos game was on offense. I do remember that the key for the Kansas City game was run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. And we talked about how they're going to have to throw in order to win, but we didn't know that Malik Willis was going to play quarterback, so now we know why the key to the game on offense
running the ball made sense.
Right, it's the only option they had, and as we said, they had to throw the ball in order to win, and the reason that they lost that game to the Chiefs was because...
They didn't throw the ball.
They didn't throw the ball.
Was the quarterback.
So, I mean, maybe, but I don't think, you know, Vrabel's very specific with these keys. You know, he's very specific when he does these shows about what that message is, because that's the message that he's going to tell the team. And so the specific message this week is lean on Derek and don't turn the ball over. And I read that as I am taking the ball out of the quarterback's hands. I'm just thinking about game plan and keys and everything, because the game dictates what happens in a passing game. Now, I've always argued this with Chris and Derek when we're doing the pregame show before the two games that Malik Willis started, because they're like, well, the key in this game is for the offensive game plan to take the ball and put Malik in good spots. And I'm like, that's great, but if it's third and 14, like, there is not a play call that is good for Malik Willis on third and 14. And we saw that when Kansas City kicked the field goal and the Titans had to score in order to win the game in overtime. And Malik, you know, looked like he had no clue what was going on out there. And so the game dictates how they're going to have to play. Clearly, Vrabel wants to be in third and one or second and four, you know, where they can still run the football. But he absolutely positively, I don't think he wants the same deep shots that they had last week against Green Bay. Maybe it's something they thought defensively they'd be able to get, you know, against Green Bay that they won't be able to get against Cincinnati. But part of me thinks Vrabel's looking at this game and he knows what Tannehill did last year against Cincinnati, which we all know what happened, the three interceptions. And remember, they came out the first play. What'd they do on the first play? Did they run it or did they throw it?
Against the Chiefs?
No, against the Bengals.
They threw it because
and what happened?
That first play was an interception.
We're not doing that this year. Just run the ball. And I do wonder if that's Vrabel just saying, you know what? I like my defense so much that I am going to tell everybody all week, we're going to run the ball. I'm going to tell the offensive line, we're going to gear up for the run. I'm going to tell the receivers, you have to go in there and dig out these safeties and you have to block these guys up. Because I am not putting the ball in my quarterback's hands because I do not trust my quarterback in this game against this team after what happened last season. And I think Vrabel's afraid of Tannehill. I think he's afraid of two things.
I think he's afraid of football.
They're going to have to throw it a little bit, but they could get by throwing for 150 yards and win some of these games.
Yes, they can.
I wonder if Vrabel's plan, as far as Tannehill, this twofold plan. One is to try to avoid having Ryan Tannehill run out on the field on Sunday and feel like it's January 22nd of this year. You know, that it's not the continuation of the playoff game last year. Hence, all of the, this is not a revenge game stuff from Vrabel and Tannehill yesterday. And I wonder if the second part of it is, against this team, I don't want his hands on the ball to make those big decisions because he's like Big Bird. And he's nice, and he's tall, and he's yellow, but he just can't make the big decisions against Cincinnati. So instead,
I don't know if I'm following that comparison.
I'm going to have Bert do it, or I'm going to have, you know, one of the actual grown-ups like Maria or Gordon do it. But not Ryan Tannehill, not Big Bird. And maybe that's the way that he feels about this game.
Yeah, I think you lost me there.
The reference to The Office.
But, and to my point, they're going to have to throw the football. But that's why when we were discussing yesterday, should Mike Vrabel put this kind of pressure on Ryan Tannehill so that Ryan Tannehill gets used to the pressure? So that whenever January 17th, 2023 rolls around and the Titans are in the divisional round of the playoffs, he's not having PTSD flashbacks to what happened this last January against the Bengals. I understand that line of thinking, but I think that Ryan Tannehill has probably looked at this game all season long and thought, I have to redeem myself against the Bengals. And I'm sure that's the last thing Mike Vrabel wants Ryan Tannehill to be thinking going into this game of, I have to play hero ball. I have to redeem myself. You don't have to do anything. Take care of the football, win this game, move on.
I don't think Tannehill's been looking forward to this game. I think he's looking away from it.
Looking forward, but anxious about it?
No, I think Tannehill, this is just my assessment of his feelings. I think he wants to forget that game ever happened. I think he wants to pretend it never happened. I don't think he wants payback. I don't think he wants, this is not Michael Jordan, you know, that heard Byron Russell tell him when he was playing baseball that he's mad that Michael retired because he thought he could guard him. And then 4 years later in the NBA finals, going up and drilling a shot over him because he had been on my list. That's just not, to me, that's just not Tannehill. I think Tannehill wishes that game never happened. I think he wishes that that game was never brought up. I think he tries to keep that game out of his memory. That's my assessment of it. I could be wrong.
Then why say it's not a revenge game?
Because that's what the coaches told everybody to say. And it's not a revenge game. Because
I think it goes beyond what the coaches told him to say. I think it is the message to the team.
Well, that's because Vrabel's afraid. I think Vrabel's afraid of Tannehill going back to that game and going into that, you know, dark tunnel, as opposed to Tannehill being too amped up to play the Bengals.
I don't think it's amped up. I think it's just he views it as this is my opportunity to redeem myself. And I don't agree with that line of thinking, because I think it's just move past it. Redeem yourself every single Sunday. It's not about the Bengals. It's not about one particular team. It's the fact that you didn't take care of the football and you hurt this team's chance at a Super Bowl. That's what it is. It's not about the Bengals. But so I do wonder how much of it is personal with Ryan Tannehill.
I do actually have a second thought on this with Tannehill and the Bengals that I haven't heard anybody discuss, that I haven't even really thought about, except for one Instagram story that I remember from 2 years ago. I'll explain that. I know that sounds really crazy and wild, but I'll explain it. 615-737-1025 is our phone number here on the program, and we will get to your phones on the Tannehill front. And again, I think Vrabel is trying to set the environment so that Ryan Tannehill does not think anything of last year. They're even wearing different uniforms for this game on Sunday. Bavarian Beer House, Nashville's only authentic German beer hall, is a place full of fun, food, music, and most importantly, beer. Enjoy traditional German bratwurst, schnitzel, giant pretzels, and more in an Oktoberfest-inspired space. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals to get a $50 gift card for only $25 to Bavarian Beer House while supplies last. Also, be sure to tune into the College Football Game of the Week on 102.5/106.3 The Game this Saturday as MTSU takes on Florida International at 5 o'clock. The College Football Game of the Week is brought to you by Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts of wall-to-wall sports, and Superbook Sports, voted the number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today.
Brian, your coach says Sunday is not a revenge game. Are you of that mindset as well?
Yeah, no doubt. Just like I said, after Thursday night, you know, That was last year. Half this team, you know, wasn't even here. So this is a new team facing another new team. Obviously, a game we want to win, but it has nothing to do with last year.
There you go, Ryan Tannehill. Nothing to do with last year. We're moved on. It's different teams. Doesn't matter, does it? Mike Vrabel's key to the game, though. Run the ball and don't turn it over.
That's the key. That's the kicker there. Don't turn the football over.
And so something I was thinking about, we all know about what happened last year against the Bengals game, and obviously this show spent a lot of time discussing that Bengals game. But there is something that I have in the back of my mind, and I remember it because I remember posting an Instagram story as like something that I thought would be funny or whatever. This was November 2nd, 2020, right after the Titans had gone to the Bengals. The Bengals were awful, and the Titans lost. And I had a piece of paper, which I wrote with a Sharpie. Titans versus Bengals. Trash on the right-hand column. Not trash on the left-hand column. Not trash. Derrick Henry, Corey Davis, uniforms. Titans wore the navy with the white pants, which they never wear anymore. Now, that's, you know, nice. I love that classic navy with the white pants. So, not trash. Trash. Defense. And remember, that was one of those 2020 defense games that was just atrocious. Trash, defense, coaching, special teams, Ryan Tannehill, Clowney and Beasley, Scott Novak's crew, Jonathan Joseph. This was the game, Ian, you remember this one, that got Jonathan Joseph basically kicked out of the NFL.
Yeah, he got cut pretty quick after that.
I mean, that was one of the all-time bad games I've ever. I mean, that would be, Jonathan Joseph's performance against the Bengals in that game put Caleb Farley in the Hall of Fame. So, Tannehill, I remember Tannehill, who was having an excellent season and did have an excellent season. I included him in the trash category of that game. So, it's not just last year's playoff game against the Bengals where Tannehill has struggled, but it's the two times that he's played the Bengals as the quarterback of the Titans. Tannehill was 18 of 30 for 233, two touchdowns and an interception. Both the touchdowns came in the fourth quarter. So the first touchdown made it 24-14 in the fourth quarter. The second one, with 5 minutes to go, made it 31-20. So that was just a prevent defense. He threw an interception in the red zone. He's one of the best red zone quarterbacks in the NFL. He threw an interception in the red zone in the first series. So the interceptions, yes, the interceptions with the Bengals are really nothing new. He's been terrible against the Bengals. And then I take it a step further, which is, who's the coach of the Bengals? Zach Taylor. What was Zach Taylor? Do you remember, Caroline, how Zach Taylor got in the NFL?
Because he was the quarterback's coach at Texas A&M.
He was not the quarterback's coach. He was the tight end's coach.
Tight end's coach.
He was the tight end's coach at Texas A&M. Zach Taylor was a quarterback at Nebraska, and he was the tight end's coach at Texas A&M. Mike Sherman, the head coach at A&M, got fired. So they fired Mike Sherman. Miami drafts Ryan Tannehill in the first round, and they hire Mike Sherman to be the offensive coordinator. So they hire his coach. Zach Taylor was brought in as the quarterback coach of the Miami Dolphins. So Zach Taylor knew Ryan Tannehill in college as the tight ends coach, and then worked with him for years. I believe 2012, 13, 14, 15, 4 years. Zach Taylor was the quarterback coach with Ryan Tannehill, including a year in 2015 where the head coach, Joe Philbin, got fired and Dan Campbell got promoted to interim coach. And I believe Zach Taylor was kind of running a lot of stuff at that point with Tannehill. So he knows Tannehill as well as any coach in the league probably knows Ryan Tannehill. And Ryan Tannehill has played poorly against the Bengals. And I wonder, going back to Mike Vrabel's key on the Coach's TV show, I wonder if Mike Vrabel is doing that because he doesn't trust Tannehill against this team and specifically this coach.
The only hole that I would poke in that argument is that last year, Ryan Tannehill's performance against the Bengals was not an outlier. It was just another game in a string of games where Tannehill was turning the ball over, where Tannehill was throwing interceptions. All last season, Tannehill was throwing interceptions. So yes, while the Bengals game is going to be one that we look at and circle and highlight because Ryan Tannehill won, single-handedly lost it, but also because it was a playoff game, it wasn't the only game he turned the ball over. But I looked at 2020, he was balling out all season long.
So I mean,
was that a season low against the Bengals?
The 233? Mm-hmm. Probably not, because I think he threw for like the Bills like, turned the ball over a couple 500. Times. I think he threw for like 140 yards, and they crushed the Bills in one game because they turned it over, and they were like six of six in the red zone or something like that. But I go back to last season, in which Tannehill actually played well the last two games and didn't turn the ball over, and we kept saying, if he doesn't turn the ball over, they're going to go to the Super Bowl. If he doesn't turn the ball over, and immediately the Bengals force a turnover. Just like in the game in 2020 when the Bengals sucked, and immediately he turned the ball over in the red zone. I think Zach Taylor knows something. I think he knows Tannehill's buttons, and I think Vrabel's afraid of that. And so Vrabel's not going to come out and say, hey, you've had two games against this team. You've turned the ball over four times. All four incredibly crucial moments. Remember the NFL Films feed where the DB was like, oh, I know what he's going to do. He's going to throw that. When he does, I'm going to pick it off. I wonder if there's something about the Bengals that Tannehill struggles with. Now, Tannehill, you're right. Tannehill had a bad year last year. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if it's this team in particular. Now, I thought Arthur Smith called a terrible game in that Bengals game in 2020, because they literally could have handed the ball off to Derrick Henry and run up the middle every play and scored on every drive just by running it. And they did to start the second half, where they ran Henry so much that he had to come out and Foreman had to go in because they were running the ball so much. And so I do wonder if Vrabel, I was mad at Arthur Smith that I felt like they got away from that in that Cincinnati game. So I wonder if that's Vrabel's key is also for the play caller of, hey, give the ball to the running backs. Give it to them. Because they did run for 150 40 yards or whatever last year against the Bengals in the playoffs. 615-737-1025. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com. And I can't blame Vrabel if he doesn't trust Tannehill in this game, because I don't trust Tannehill in this game. What do we have in the text line?
One texter texts in and says, you aren't giving Tannehill enough credit. He's been balling this season. He's been playing Tannehill ball. And I don't think it's specifically one team only that he turns the ball over against.
Tannehill was playing great ball in 2020, and he had a terrible game against the Bengals. He was included on the trash list from my Sharpie on November 2nd, 2020. That's all I can remember specifically about that. As
far
as
Tannehill
playing,
or was it a bad interception?
It was a horrible interception. I mean, I can't tell you the exact game. I didn't watch tape, but I can tell you that I did put him on the trash list for whatever reason. And it was a bad interception. It was one of those, what? It's what I call a Dr. Phil interception. It's one of those, what were you thinking when you threw that ball? It's like Vince Young used to throw about one of those a game, and I was like, which is kind of how I felt Thursday night.
That's what I was
going to
say. Well, what about Green Bay? That was a what were you thinking?
I was so mad at that interception last Thursday.
But he wasn't trash on Thursday.
No, it was good. But they were right there on the doorstep. Right there on the doorstep of just blowing the game open. And he just throws it right to their guy. But Bob Shoup said it, you know, happens all the time. So maybe, you know, we shouldn't be mad about it. 615-737-1025. What else we got?
Another texture text in the text line says, ever since that playoff game, I have been absolutely terrified of the Bengals.
I'm not really, like, worried about the Bengals. I'm worried about Tannehill. I mean, I think the Bengals are a good team. Like, I think they're 6-4 or whatever, and their schedule the rest of the way is freaking brutal. So I'm not even sure if they'll make the playoffs. I have an immense amount of respect for that quarterback. I think they've got great receivers. You know, I think their defense, they've got a good pass rush, which I think is another thing that Vrabel's probably a little worried about, because they've got Trey Hendrickson and they've got Sam Hubbard, you know, that rush the passer and do a pretty good job of it. I mean, they're a solid team.
They're a solid team.
But I'm not, like, scared of the Bengals. There's no team left on the schedule that I am, quote-unquote, scared about. I'm not scared of the Eagles.
Eagles?
I'm not scared of the Cowboys.
Cowboys?
No, not scared of the Cowboys. I think the Titans, I think the Cowboys are going to be 4.5-point favorites when they play that game, and I think that's going to be the easiest money ever made. I think the Titans are going to beat the crap out of the Cowboys. I think they're going to run it right up the Cowboys' tush, and there's nothing Dallas is going to be able to do about it, because Dallas stinks at stopping the run, and I don't think Dallas is a particularly tough team, and it's going to be outdoors at New Year's, and I think that has Cowboy butt-kicking written all over it. The Eagles next week, right now I'd pick the Eagles. But the Cowboys, I'm not worried about the Cowboys. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll get back into your phones here coming up, 615-737-1025 on the Cincinnati game. Be sure to tune into the post-game show. That's right. Join Jonathan Hutton and Chad Withrow live from the Superbook Lounge and Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway. The postgame show is brought to you by Renter's Warehouse, Two Rivers Ford. Custom order your new Ford from Two Rivers Ford. And Superbook Sports, Florida, the number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today.
The top 10, college football playoff top 25. Less than 2 weeks remaining, two more rankings. And you should note that the lowest anybody's been ranked and made it into the playoff at this juncture is number 7. Tennessee falls 5 spots after getting blown out by South Carolina.
And I think the key point is losing Hendon Hooker for the rest of the season. And so not just the loss, but if you're ranking Tennessee at this stage, you rank them without Hendon Hooker on that roster, and that makes you lose a couple more places in the rankings.
The issue that I have here, though, is that this will affect what bowl game Tennessee ultimately goes to. We know they're not going to a playoff game. We know that. We get that. But Tennessee has earned the right to be in a more highly prioritized bowl than LSU and or Alabama.
They with beat Hendon Hooker, though.
Correct.
With
but
Hendon Hooker.
But still, it's the rest of the team still was a part of those.
But
victories.
You rank them with the players they have
but
now.
But it's also very likely that all of them are going to be in the year 6 there.
I love how Reese Davis is like, guys, we got to move it along. We got to get to number 9. We got to get to number 8. We got to move it along. Sorry. We got to go. We can't just spend here all day talking about Tennessee. which is an interesting discussion that I do want to touch on about the idea of, you know, do you punish Tennessee in the rankings because they don't have Hendon Hooker? That being said, at 10, you heard what Greg McElroy said right there. Mm-hmm. Brett McMurphy tweeted out the same thing. They're not going to the Sugar Bowl. They're not going to the Orange Bowl. So at best, even with a win against Vanderbilt on Saturday, which is no sure thing, which is also something that is disheartening to say if we're talking about the same Tennessee team that we've been talking about for the last 3 months. If they, the best they can do is go to the Cotton Bowl. And the Cotton Bowl is still a New Year's Six Bowl, but there's just something about the Cotton Bowl and the Peach Bowl that when they aren't playoff games, they just don't have the juice of the rest of the New Year's Six, of the Orange Bowl, the Sugar Bowl. It's not. The Orange Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Rose Bowl, Fiesta Bowl. Like, that is, you know, the Rose Bowl. That is the Sugar Bowl. And instead, it's like the Cotton Bowl. Maybe. And it's like, woof. All this season, just wasted. And I cannot get over this. And I tweeted that out last night, that I was like, when Brett McMurphy said that Tennessee is definitely not going to the Sugar Bowl and probably not going to the Orange Bowl now. And I tweeted out, I go, so this season was for nothing. And, but, I mean, Twitter got so mad at me yesterday. Woo!
I mean, I understand. Let's say, hypothetically, if LSU does beat Georgia in the SEC championship game, then they go to the playoffs. That would leave a spot open for the Sugar Bowl. Does Alabama really deserve to be in the Sugar Bowl over Tennessee?
Does Alabama deserve to be in the Sugar Bowl over Tennessee?
I mean, I know that Alabama is ranked higher than Tennessee where it is right now.
And which I think is kind of bull crap.
I do, too. I mean, I understand that Alabama's one of their losses is to the number 5 team in the country right now, but also one of their losses is to Tennessee. And I understand that recency bias is a big part of this. But Alabama being ranked 3 spots higher than Tennessee seems a little crooked to me.
So I think the number one thing for LSU is I think they need to root for Michigan to lose for Michigan to lose on Saturday, because if Ohio State wins, they're going to take a 1-loss Ohio State team over a 2-loss LSU team. I'm convinced.
Well, if LSU wins the SEC championship game, then they will get in. If they lose, they will not.
I don't think so. If Ohio State loses to Michigan, I could see them putting a 1-loss Ohio State in over a 2-loss SEC champion LSU. And the reason I say that is because, back to the Alabama point, they love Ohio State. They love Ohio State, just like they love Alabama. I don't even like this Alabama team.
And
I consider myself friends with the coach, and I don't even like this Alabama team. I think they, you know, for them, they stink for Alabama. Now, I don't know if they're ranking Tennessee behind Alabama because of Hendon Hooker, or if they're ranking Tennessee behind Alabama because the 2 games Alabama lost were by the skin of their teeth to Tennessee and LSU in the last play, and Tennessee just gave up 63 points to South Carolina. But the message still stands, which is that this season was all for nothing if Tennessee doesn't get to a good bowl game. And the Cotton Bowl, oh, that's a tough pill to swallow. Like, I'm a little torn here because if they go to the Cotton Bowl, it's not the Sugar Bowl, it's not the Orange Bowl, but it is a New Year's Six Bowl, and they've never been to a New Year's Six Bowl since this process has been out there. And I'm trying to think of the last time they went to a BCS Bowl. Did they go to a BCS Bowl in 2001? I don't think they did. I think LSU took that SEC slot in the Sugar Bowl because Nebraska played Miami in the championship. So I don't think they went to a BCS Bowl then. I don't think they've been to a BCS. I could be wrong about this one. I don't think they've been to a BCS Bowl since they won a Fiesta Bowl in 98. And so,
I don't know.
The New Year's Six is technically a BCS game, or what used to be a BCS game. It is, and the Cotton Bowl is technically part of that. But man, to have the season that they had, and to have almost nothing to show for it,
Well, to have the season they had and to miss the playoff, I think, is the bigger story here. But to miss the playoff and miss the Sugar Bowl potentially, and that's also making the assumption that they're going to beat Vanderbilt on Saturday. I do think that they will, but this game is a lot more interesting than I expected it to be at least 2 or 3 weeks ago. But I'm with you. I mean, the Cotton Bowl to me, yes, it's the New Year's Six Bowl, and yes, if your team's in it, you'd be excited about that. But with the way that this team has played, I mean, man. And if Alabama, let's say if LSU goes to the CFP and Alabama goes to the Sugar Bowl, I think that Tennessee fans have every right to be a little upset with that.
But then at least Tennessee goes to the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, that's true.
At least Tennessee gets into a better bowl game. I still don't think LSU's getting in unless it's over Michigan. I think a one-loss Ohio State would be ahead of an LSU who just went off and beat Georgia. I do.
And maybe
just because of how much they love Ohio State. What's that?
But Tennessee fans better hope that LSU gets in.
Yeah, I mean, no disrespect, I don't even think it's worth talking about because I think Georgia is just
that much better. I don't think it's going to happen.
But
I'm just saying. That is, if to not be in the Cotton Bowl is LSU getting in. And that's what's really, really sad, too, is Tennessee has controlled their own destiny this entire season. And now they just have to hope and pray that other teams lose along the way so they don't end up in an embarrassing bowl.
I mean, it just, that's so disappointing for the season that they had. Boy, Twitter was mad at me yesterday. Oh, my goodness gracious. It was like I had committed a felony because I said that, you know, the season was all for nothing. If they don't go to the Sugar Bowl, the Orange Bowl. I mean, this great season in which the non-tangible things, that's great. You know, we were on College Game Day 2 weeks in a row, and we threw the goalposts into the river. And, you know, we brought respect back to our program. And the non-tangible things, those are fine because you can argue them however you want to argue them. You can argue the fact of, hey, you know, we beat Alabama for the first time in 15 years. Congratulations. Nobody cares. Nobody cares that A&M beat them. Nobody cares that South Carolina and Stephen Garcia beat them in 2010. That'd be like South Carolina saying, hey, I know that we kind of stink, but we beat Tennessee this year and hung 63 on them. And guess what? 2 weeks from now,
that is what they're saying.
Nobody will care, though. Like, when Shane Beamer gets there to SEC Media Days and is like, people are taking South Carolina seriously because we beat Tennessee by 30 last year, everyone's going to be like,
no,
oh, yeah,
not.
That's right. You did do that. You did do that. We're not taking
you
seriously.
And also, nobody's taking you seriously.
No, but you did do that. And so it's just so, it's so sad. It's so sad for Tennessee that they have this great season, and here they are. And I do wonder, if Joey Galloway and Greg McElroy are onto something, that Tennessee's getting dropped because Hendon Hooker got hurt. I normally don't believe in that kind of stuff. It reminds me of, I want to say, Cincinnati got into the NCAA tournament, should have been a one seed years ago. Kenyon Martin got hurt and wasn't going to play. And because of that, they ended up making, I think, Cincinnati a two seed, and they got beat in the first round. But normally they don't do that about the injury dropping a team, but maybe that had a part into it with the Hendon Hooker thing. 615. Go ahead.
My understanding was of it with injuries is if your quarterback is hurt for a game and you lose that game, then the committee would be more willing to give you a benefit of the doubt in terms of injuries. But I've never heard of the committee docking you for an injured quarterback, but news to me.
615-737-1025. We'll roll it into your phones here on Stelman & Company. We got that. We got the Titans on the table. Whatever. It's Thanksgiving. We're in such a good mood. 615-737-1025. Hey, TriStar Moving. Those are my official movers. I love my friends at TriStar Moving. I don't know anybody who gets excited about moving. Certainly not me. It's stressful, it takes a ton of time, and it is not fun. But when I found my friends at TriStar Moving when I moved 2 years ago, it was a blast. Which I'm dead serious about. Why? Because it made the process so easy. And that's why I always tell people who are looking to move, hey, call TriStar Moving, get a bid. You'll work with their awesome sales staff. You'll get to see what they're all about. But more importantly, you'll get a bid. And when you get the bid, I think you'll compare it with other movers, and you'll be like, we're going with TriStar. Plus, if you tell them I sent you, you'll get 10% off, which considering that moving is incredibly expensive, 10% off is really good. That's a lot of money. So that's TriStar Moving, and they've got their new utility vans that'll help with pack jobs and separate the high valuable from fragile items so that nothing gets busted. They're great. If you're looking to move, give my friends at TriStar Moving a call, 615-640-1219, or visit their website at nationalmoving.org/radio. That'll give you 10% off your entire move. That's TriStar Moving, 615-640-1219, nationalmoving.org/radio. Tell them Jared Stillman sent you for 10% off your entire move. That's TriStar Moving. My guys, my official movers. Stillman and Company on this Thanksgiving Day Eve. Play silly underdog picks. Pick three football underdog teams you think will win this week for a chance to win great prizes. Play now at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports, voted the number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. Jason Fitz usually joins us on a Thursday, on a Wednesday. But with Thanksgiving, moving things around, we got Jared versus Joe. We got the Predators tonight. So Jason Fitz not going to join us today. He's brought to you by Blood Assurance. Give blood, give local, save lives. Again, that is Blood Assurance. Give blood, give local, save lives. A great thing to do around this holiday season. Let's go to your phones. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Steve Texan says, here's a hypothetical about Tennessee. What if Hendon Hooker gets injured, but Tennessee beats South Carolina and then Vanderbilt? Are they still in the playoff due to the loss of their quarterback?
No. Yeah. No, they're out of the playoff.
Hypothetically, if Tennessee beats South Carolina and Vandy, but Hendon Hooker gets hurt.
Oh, if they had beaten South Carolina?
Yeah, and then Vandy, they'd still be in.
Probably not.
Why probably not?
Well, I think Tennessee probably wouldn't have gotten in even if they had gone undefeated if USC beats Notre Dame and wins the Pac-12 and TCU stays unbeaten. But without Hendon Hooker, then the discussion becomes Tennessee or Michigan. And if Tennessee doesn't have Hendon Hooker, I think they probably would take the loser of Ohio State, Michigan over Tennessee.
Maybe. Maybe.
And they love those teams. Even though they don't play anybody, they freaking love Ohio State and Michigan.
They really
do. I'm going to say no. What's next?
Jeff from Hendersonville says, if LSU loses to Georgia, then Tennessee should go ahead of LSU in the rankings and get a better bowl.
See, I don't know that at 5, if LSU loses to Georgia, the number one team in the country, that they'll drop them below 10.
Yeah, and also, I don't know how the committee penalizes teams in terms of a bowl bid if they're in the conference championship, because then that would de-incentivize competing for a conference championship.
Oh, I mean, there's sometimes where you're better off not playing in the conference championship than you would be playing in it. Like Alabama lost to Auburn in 2017, and so they didn't have to play Georgia in the SEC championship game. Auburn did. Auburn lost. Auburn was out, and Alabama went to the playoff. I mean, sometimes the conference championship game can screw you just as much as anything else. Like last year, Alabama needed that conference championship game because that propelled them into the playoff by beating Georgia.
Right.
But sometimes it hurts you. I mean, I think the conference championship game probably hurts LSU this year because they probably do lose to Georgia, but I don't think it drops them far enough. And the highest ranked SEC team not in the playoff goes to the Sugar Bowl. And I can't see LSU dropping beneath Alabama when LSU beat Alabama. Although Alabama will have 2 losses, LSU will have 3. But then the question for the Sugar Bowl spot is still LSU or Alabama. And since everybody is projecting that LSU is going to the Sugar Bowl, I think the assumption with those projections is that Georgia is going to beat LSU. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's the projection. So I don't think, I mean, look, when Brett McMurphy says, there is nobody who is more plugged into college football than Brett McMurphy. I mean, I've known Brett McMurphy for 10 years. There is nobody who is more plugged in than he is. He was everything that Adrian Wojnarowski is for basketball. He was for college football when he was at ESPN, and he still has great sources. And when Brett McMurphy tweets out last night, Tennessee is definitely not going to the Sugar Bowl, and they're probably not going to the Orange Bowl, he's telling you. He's not, I think. He's telling you Tennessee is not going to the Sugar Bowl, and they're probably not going to the Orange Bowl, which leads them with the Cotton Bowl. Now, I did see some people texting in about the idea that, hey, the Cotton Bowl is still a New Year's Six game, and that is fair. You know, even though the projections are Tulane, why is Tulane in this? Why is not a real team in there?
Bad team.
We want real teams in these big bowl games.
They're a good team.
They're top 20.
Yeah.
Well, so?
I'm just saying. You say a real team. Well, they're 19th ranked team in the country, ranked above Ole
Miss. 19th?
I said top 20. 19 is top 20.
19 in a New Year's Six? Shouldn't we have the best 12 teams in the New Year's Six?
Ideally, yes.
So, you know, the 11th best team or 13th best team is getting left out so we can get the 19th best Tulane in there.
And it may make be assumptions that teams 12 through 19 or 13 through 16 are going to lose, or 18 rather, are going to lose.
Who's who is that? Like, I'd rather play Oregon than play Tulane. That's
Oregon's
more fun.
At 9. Yeah.
So the winner of the Pac-12, which is probably going to be USC. The winner of the Pac-12, if USC doesn't go to the playoff, the winner of the Pac-12 is going to go to the Rose Bowl. But if USC goes to the playoff, then Oregon goes to the Rose Bowl, I would assume. So, I don't know. I just, you know, the Cotton Bowl, it's a good bowl, but is it?
It's a good bowl, but it doesn't carry the same, like, oomph like the Sugar Bowl does.
Right, like Arkansas goes to the Cotton Bowl every now and then. You know, like, Ole Miss goes to the Cotton Bowl. Right, that's the point. It's like if Tennessee is some elite SEC program, eventually you've got to go to some of these bowl games that not everybody in the SEC, not named Kentucky, gets to go to every once in a while.
Like, if you don't make the playoff, like, the Sugar Bowl is a fine consolation prize.
Absolutely. If you grew up in the South, the Sugar Bowl is a big deal, just like the Rose Bowl is a big deal if you grew up out on the West Coast. What else we got? Uh-huh.
Slick texts into the text line and says, what do any of the bowls matter if it's not a playoff bowl?
I mean, there is something about the big bowl games. There is something about, and I go back to the Sugar Bowl that we were just talking about, but I use the Rose Bowl kind of as the example. The TV ratings for the Rose Bowl, I don't know what it is, but the TV ratings for the Rose Bowl every year are astronomical. And it is an honor if you play in the Big Ten, even if you're Ohio State and you're used to going to the playoff almost every year, it is an honor to play in the Rose Bowl. That's why when USC and UCLA bolted from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten, it was like, and then it was like, they're going to blow up the Rose Bowl. And the Big Ten was like, yeah, we know. We know. And it's like, how dare you blow up the Rose Bowl? Because the Rose Bowl is just so special. And sometimes I think the Rose Bowl whiffs their own farts too much, and it's like, guys, it ain't all roses, literally. But at the end of the day, those bowls are special. Sugar Bowl is a special bowl. Orange Bowl is a special bowl. The Peach Bowl, which this year's a playoff game, so it's different. But the two bowls that they added to the New Year's Six from the BCX. Yes. The two bowls they added from the New Year's Six. The Peach Bowl and the Cotton Bowl are not as good as the other New Year's Six bowls. And I thought I was going to get crushed for feeling that way, but I think most people kind of agree that the Peach Bowl and the Cotton Bowl, when they're not playoff games, are kind of Johnny-come-lately games, and they're just not the same juice. And that's why Tulane is probably going to be playing in one of these. 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad will join us for an early edition of Jared versus Joe. And boy, do we have a lot to argue about. So we will do that arguing. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to weigh in for Jared versus Joe, which we don't really take calls for, but I just threw out the number anyways because I'm accustomed to doing that. Hey, tune in for tomorrow's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5-106.3 The Game. The Game of the Week will feature the New York Football Giants taking on the Dallas Cowboys at 3 o'clock. The Game of the Week is brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Superbook Sports. Vote the number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today.